it's not impossible. She stares down at everything I've laid out before her. I watch her in silence until her shoulders begin to shake and she covers her mouth with her hand. She meets my gaze as huge tears spill out of her eyes. She crawls forward and throws her arms around my neck. She tells me she loves me. "You love me so much, Rachel." She kisses me over and over. "We've got this, Miles," she whispers against my ear. I nod and hug her back. "We've got this, Rachel."
Chapter 19. Tate. It's Thursday. Game night. Normally, the sound of their Thursday night game gets under my skin. Tonight, it's music to my ears, knowing that Miles should be home. I have no idea what to expect from him or this arrangement we've got going on. I haven't texted or spoken to him in the 5 days since he's been gone. I know that with as much as I'm thinking about him, I shouldn't be doing this. For something that's supposed to be a casual thing, it's felt anything but casual. For me, it's been extremely involved. Intense, even. He's pretty much all I've thought about since that night in the rain, and it's quite pathetic that I'm reaching for the doorknob to walk inside my apartment and my damn hand is shaking, knowing he might be in there. I open the door to the apartment, and Corbin is the first to look up. He nods, but doesn't even say hi. Ian waves from his seat on the couch, then looks back at the TV. Dylan's eyes roam up and down my body, and I do what I can to stop myself from rolling my eyes. Miles doesn't do anything, because Miles isn't here. My whole body sighs from disappointment. I drop my purse onto the empty chair in the living room and tell myself it's a good thing he isn't here, because I've got way too much homework to do anyway. "There's pizza in the fridge," Corbin says. "Nice." I walk into the kitchen and open the cabinet to remove a plate. I hear footsteps closing in on me, and my heart rate kicks up a notch. A hand touches me on my lower back, and I immediately smile and turn around to face Miles. Only it isn't Miles. It's Dylan.
"Hey, Tate,"
he says, reaching around me to the cabinet. The hand that first touched my lower back is still on me, but now that I've turned to face him, his hand has slid to my waist. He keeps his eyes locked with mine as he reaches past me and opens the cabinet.
"Just need a cup for my beer,"
he says, excusing the fact that he's right here, touching me, his face only inches from my face. I hate that he saw me smiling when I turned around. I just gave him the wrong idea. "Well, you won't find a cup in my pocket," I say, pushing his hand off of me. I look away from Dylan just as Miles steps into the kitchen. His eyes are burning holes into the part of me that Dylan was just touching. Miles saw Dylan's hand on me. Miles is looking at Dylan now as if he just committed murder.
"Since when do you drink beer from a cup?" Miles says.
Dylan turns around and looks at Miles, then glances back to me and smiles a very blatant, flirtatious smile.
"Since Tate was standing so close to the cabinet?"
Shit. He's not even hiding it. He thinks I'm into him. Miles walks to the refrigerator and opens it.
"So, Dylan, how's your wife?"
Miles doesn't make an attempt to remove anything. He's just standing there, staring into the refrigerator with his fingers gripping the door handle harder than it's ever been gripped, I'm sure. Dylan is still looking at me, staring down at me.
"She's at work," he says pointedly.
"For at least 4 more hours." Miles slams the refrigerator and takes 2 quick steps toward Dylan. Dylan stands up straight, and I immediately scoot 2 feet away from him.
"Corbin specifically instructed you to keep your hands off his sister. Show him some fucking respect."
Dylan's jaw twitches, and he doesn't back down or look away from Miles. In fact, he takes a step toward him, closing the space between them.
"Sounds to me like this isn't really about Corbin," Dylan says, seething.
My heart is pounding in my chest. I feel guilty that I gave Dylan the wrong idea, and even guiltier that they're arguing about it now. But damn it, I love that Miles hates him so much.
I just wish I knew if it was because he doesn't like that Dylan is flirting when he's got a wife at home, or if he doesn't like that Dylan is flirting with me. And now Corbin is standing in the doorway. Shit. What really isn't about me? Corbin asks, watching the two of them in their standoff. Miles backs up a step and turns so that he can face Dylan and Corbin at the same time. His eyes remain locked hard with Dylan's.
He's trying to fuck your sister.
Jesus Christ, Miles. Ever hear of sugarcoating? Corbin doesn't even flinch.
Go home to your wife, Dylan, he says firmly.
As embarrassing as this is, I don't do anything to step in and defend Dylan, because I get the feeling that Miles and Corbin have been looking for an excuse to defriend him for a while now. I would also never defend a man who has no respect for his marriage. Dylan stares at Corbin for several painstakingly long seconds, then turns to face me with his back to both Miles and Corbin. This boy seriously has a death wish.
I live in 1012, he whispers with a wink. Stop by sometime. She works weeknights.
He turns away and walks between Corbin and Miles.
The two of you can go fuck yourselves.
Corbin turns and his fists are clenched. He begins to stalk after Dylan, but Miles grabs his arm and pulls him back into the kitchen. He doesn't release Corbin's arm until the front door slams shut. Corbin turns to face me, and he looks so angry I'm surprised steam isn't coming from his ears. His face is red, and he's popping his knuckles. I forgot how insanely protective he is of me. I feel like I'm 15 again, only now I suddenly have two overprotective brothers.
Erase that apartment number from your head, Tate, Corbin says.
I shake my head, somewhat disappointed that he would even think I'd want to remember Dylan's apartment number. I have standards, Corbin. He nods, but he's still making an attempt to calm himself down. He inhales a deep breath, pops his jaw, then walks back into the living room. Miles is leaning against the counter, staring down at his feet. I watch him silently until he finally raises his eyes and looks up at me. He glances toward the living room, then kicks off the counter and walks toward me. Every step closer he takes, the more I press myself into the counter behind me, making an attempt to back away from the intensity in his eyes, even though I can't very well go anywhere. He reaches me. He smells good. Like apples. Forbidden fruit.
Ask me if you can study at my place, he whispers.
I nod, wondering why in the hell he would make such a random request after everything that just happened. I do it anyway, though. Can I study at your place? He breaks out into a huge grin and drops his forehead to the side of my head so that his lips are directly over my ear.
I meant for you to ask me in front of your brother, he says, laughing quietly. So I have an excuse to get you over there.
Well, that's embarrassing. Now he knows exactly how much I'm not Tate when I'm near him. I'm only liquid, conforming, doing what he asks, doing what I'm told, doing what he wants me to do. Oh, I say quietly as I watch him ease away from me. That makes a lot more sense. He's still smiling, and I didn't realize how much I missed seeing that smile. He should smile all the time, forever. At me. He walks out of the kitchen and heads back to the living room, so I go to my room and shower in record time. I didn't realize I was such a good actress. I had practice, though. 5 minutes of practice. I stood in my room trying to think of the best, most casual line for when I walked into the living room to ask Miles for his key. I decided to wait until a particularly loud moment during the game, and then I burst out of the room and yelled at all of them, "You guys either need to mute the damn TV or go watch it next door because I'm trying to study." Miles looked at me and tried to hide his smile. Ian looked at me with suspicion, and Corbin rolled his eyes.
"You go next door," Corbin said. "We're watching the game."
He looked at Miles.
"She can use your place, right?"
Miles stood up immediately and said,
"Sure, I'll let her in."
I grabbed my things, followed him out of my apartment, and now, here we are. Miles opens his apartment door for me, even though it isn't locked. Corbin doesn't know that, though.
He walks inside and I slip in behind him. He shuts the door and we turn and face each other. I really do have homework, I say. I don't know what he's expecting to happen right this second, but I feel like I need to let him know that just because he shows up after a few days away, that doesn't mean he's my number one priority. Even though he pretty much is. I really do have a game to watch, he says, pointing over his shoulder at my apartment, but walking toward me at the same time. He takes my books out of my hands and walks with them to the table, where he sets them down. He starts walking back toward me and doesn't stop until his lips are pressed to mine and we can't walk any farther because my back is against the apartment door. His hands are gripping my waist and mine are gripping his shoulders. His tongue slides between my lips and into my mouth and I take it very willingly. He groans and presses himself against me as my hands slide up his neck and through his hair. He pulls away just as fast and steps back several feet. He's looking at me like it's somehow my fault that he has to leave. He runs two frustrated palms down his face and releases a deep breath. You didn't get to eat earlier, he says. I'll bring you some pizza. He walks back toward me, and I step aside without responding. He opens the door and disappears. He's so weird. I walk to the table and begin to lay everything out that I need in order to study. I'm pulling out my chair to sit when his apartment door flies open again. I turn around and he's walking toward the kitchen with a plate in his hands. He puts the pizza in his microwave, presses a few buttons and starts it, and then heads straight toward me. He's doing that intimidating thing again that makes me naturally back away from him, but his table is behind me and I can't go anywhere. He reaches me and quickly presses his lips to mine. I have to go back over there. He says, You good? I nod. You need anything? I shake my head. There's juice and bottled water in the fridge. Thanks. He kisses me briefly again before he releases me and walks out the door. I fall into my chair. He's so nice. I could get used to this. I pull my notebook in front of me and begin studying. About half an hour passes and then I get a text from him. Miles, how's the homework going? I'm reading the text on my phone, smiling like an idiot. He goes 9 days without seeing or texting me, and now he's texting me from 20 feet away. Me, good, how's the game going? Miles, halftime, we're losing. Me, bummer. Miles, you knew I didn't have cable. Me. Question mark, question mark, question mark? Miles. Earlier, when you yelled at us, you told us to go to my place to watch the game, but you already knew I didn't have cable. I think Ian's suspicious now. Me. Oh no, I didn't think about that. Miles. It's cool. He's just giving me looks like he knows something is up. Honestly, I don't care if he knows. He knows everything else about me. Me. I'm surprised you didn't tell him already. Don't all guys kiss and tell? Miles. Not me, Tate. Me. I guess you're the exception. Now leave me alone, I have to study. Miles. Don't come back until I tell you the game is over. I lay my phone down on the table. Unable to wipe the grin from my face. An hour later, the door to his apartment opens. I look up and he walks in, shuts the door, and casually falls against it.
Game's over, he says.
I drop my pen. Perfect timing. I just finished my homework. His eyes fall to my books, spread out across the table.
Corbin's probably expecting you.
I don't know if that's his way of telling me I should leave, or if he's just making conversation. I stand up anyway and begin to gather my books, attempting to hide the disappointment on my face. He walks straight to me and takes the books out of my hands, setting them back down. He gives them a shove, sliding them a foot away, and then he grabs my waist and pushes me onto the table.
That doesn't mean I want you to leave, he says firmly, looking me hard in the eyes.
I don't smile this time because he just made me nervous again. Every time he looks at me with this much intensity, I get nervous. He slides me to the very edge of the table and stands between my legs. His hands are still on my waist, but his lips are now on my jaw.
"I was thinking," he says softly, his breath caressing my neck, covering me in chills, "about tonight, and how you've been in class all day."
He slides his hands beneath me, lifting me off the table.
"And how you work all weekend, every weekend."
My legs are wrapped around him now. He's carrying me to his bedroom. Now he's laying me on his bed. Now he's on top of me, brushing my hair back, looking me in the eyes.
"And I realized that you never have a day off."
His mouth is back to my jaw again, kissing it softly between each sentence.
"You haven't had a day off since Thanksgiving, have you?"
I shake my head, not understanding why he's talking so much, but loving it just the same. His hand slides up under my shirt and his palm meets my stomach, continuing upward until he's cupping my breast.
"You must be really tired, Tate."
I shake my head. "Not really." "I'm lying. I'm exhausted." His lips leave my neck and he looks me in the eyes.
"You're lying," he says,
brushing his thumb over the thin layer of bra covering my nipple.
"I can tell you're tired."
He lowers his mouth until it's pressed against mine, so softly I barely even feel it.
"I just want to kiss you for a few minutes, okay?
Then you're going to leave and go get some rest. I don't want you to think I expect something just because we're both home." His mouth touches mine again, but his lips can't compare to what his words do to me. I never knew thoughtfulness could be such a turn-on. But, oh my God, it's so hot. His hand slides beneath my bra and his mouth invades me. Every time his tongue caresses mine, it makes my head spin. I wonder if that will ever get old. I know he said he just wanted to kiss me for a few minutes, but his definition of kiss and my definition of kiss are written in two different languages. His mouth is everywhere. So are his hands. He pushes my shirt up above my bra, pulling one side of it down until my breast is exposed. He teases me with his tongue, looking up at me while he does it. His mouth is warm and his tongue is even warmer, causing soft whimpers to escape from me. He runs his hand down my stomach and lifts slightly off of me, holding his weight up on his elbow. His hand trails over my jeans until he reaches the insides of my thighs. He runs his fingers against the material between my legs, and I let my head fall back and my eyes close. Good Lord, I love his version of kissing. He begins to rub his hand over me, pressing firmly against my jeans until my entire body is silently begging for him. His mouth is no longer on my breast. It's on my neck now. And he's kissing, nibbling, sucking all in one spot, as if he's trying to brand me. I'm trying to be quiet, but it's impossible when he's creating this amazing friction between us. But that's fine, because he's not being quiet either. Every time I moan, he groans or sighs or whispers my name, which is why I'm being so loud. Because I love his sounds. Love them. His hand quickly moves to the button on my jeans and he unbuttons them, but he doesn't switch positions or move away from my neck. He pulls my zipper down and slides his hands on top of my panties. He resumes the same movements, only this time they're a million times more intense, and I can instantly tell he isn't going to have to do it for much longer. My back arches off the bed, and it takes all I have not to pull away from his hand. It's as if he knows exactly the right places to touch that will make me react.
"Christ, Tate, you're so wet."
Two of his fingers pull my panties aside.
"I want to feel you."
And that's it. I'm a goner. His finger slips inside me, but his thumb remains outside, coaxing moans and oh my gods and don't stops out of me like I'm a broken record. He kisses me, swallowing all my sounds while my body begins to tremble beneath his hand. The sensation lasts so long and is so intense I'm afraid to let go of him when it's over. I don't want his hand to leave me.
I want to fall asleep like this.
I'm completely still, but we're both breathing so heavily we're unable to move. His mouth is still on mine and our eyes are closed, but he's not kissing me. After a few moments, he finally pulls his hand out of my pants, then zips and buttons them back up. When I open my eyes, he's slowly sliding his fingers out of his mouth with a grin. Holy shit. I'm so glad I'm not standing up right now, or seeing him do that would have made me fall straight to the floor.
Wow, I say as I exhale. You're pretty damn good at this.
He smiles even wider.
Why, thank you, he says.
He leans forward and kisses my forehead.
Now go home and get some sleep, girl.
He begins to lift off the bed and I grab his arms and pull him back down. Wait, I tell him. I push him onto his back and slide on top of him.
That's not really fair to you.
I'm not keeping score, he says, rolling me onto my back. Corbin's probably wondering why you're still over here. He stands up and grabs my wrists to pull me up with him. He pulls me against him close enough for me to tell he isn't at all ready for me to leave yet.
If Corbin says anything, I'll just tell him I didn't want to leave until I was finished with my homework.
Miles shakes his head.
You need to go back, Tate, he says. He thanked me for protecting you from Dylan earlier. How do you think he'd feel if he knew I only did that because I was being selfish and wanted you all to myself?
I shake my head. I don't care how he'd feel. It's not his business. Miles brings his hands to my cheeks.
I care. He's my friend. I don't want him to find out what a hypocrite I am.
He kisses my forehead and pulls me out of the bedroom door before I can respond. He gathers my books and hands them to me when I reach the front door. But before I walk out, he grabs my elbow and stops me. He's staring down at me, but there's something else in his expression this time. Something in his eyes that isn't desire or want or disappointment or intimidation. It's something unspoken. Something he wants to say to me that he's too afraid to say. His hands cup my cheeks, and he presses his mouth to mine so hard I hit the frame of the door behind me. He kisses me so possessively and desperately, it would make me sad, if only I didn't love it so much. He inhales deeply and pulls away, exhaling slowly, staring me hard in the eyes. He drops his hand and steps back, waiting for me to step into the hallway before he closes his door. I have no idea what that was, but I need more of it. I somehow make my legs move and I walk into Corbin's apartment. Corbin isn't in the living room, so I set my books down on the counter. I hear Corbin's shower running. Corbin's in the shower. I immediately walk out the door and back across the hall and knock. His door swings open so quickly, it's as if Miles was still standing in the same spot. He glances over my shoulder at my apartment door. Corbin's in the shower, I say. Miles looks back at me, and before I think he even has time to process my words, he's pulling me inside his apartment. He slams the door shut and shoves me against it, and once again his mouth is everywhere. I waste no time unbuttoning his jeans and pulling them down several inches. His hands take over and pull my pants down completely along with my underwear. As soon as he slides my feet out of them, he's urging me toward his kitchen table. He spins me around, positioning me until I'm leaning across the table on my stomach. He reaches between my legs, spreading them farther apart while freeing himself from his jeans. Both of his hands move to my waist and grip tightly. He steadies himself against me and then carefully eases himself inside me.
Oh, God, he groans.
I press my palms flat out on the table. There's nothing to grab hold of, and I desperately need to grab something. He leans forward, pressing his chest against my back. His breaths are heavy and hot and crashing against my skin.
I have to get a condom.
Okay, I breathe out.
He hasn't backed away yet, though, and my body naturally wants to take him in the rest of the way. I press myself against him, pushing him further inside me, causing him to dig his fingers into my hips so hard I wince.
Don't, Tate.
His voice is a warning. Or a dare.
I do it again, and he groans, quickly pulling out of me completely. His hands are still digging into my hips, and he's still pressed against me. He's just no longer inside me. "I'm on the pill," I whisper. He doesn't move. I close my eyes, needing him to do something. Anything. I'm dying here.
"Tate," he whispers.
He doesn't follow it up with anything. We stand quietly still, with him in the same position, poised right outside me.
"Damn it."
He releases my waist and finds my hands palm side down on the table. He slides his fingers through mine and squeezes, then buries his face against my neck from behind me.
"Brace yourself."
He slams into me so unexpectedly I scream. One of his hands leaves mine and he brings it to my mouth and covers it. "Shh," he warns. He holds still, giving me a moment to adjust to him inside me. He pulls out with a moan and slams into me again, causing me to yell out once more. His hand muffles my noises this time. He repeats his movements, harder, faster. He's grunting with every thrust, and I'm making noises I didn't even know I could make. I've never experienced anything like this before. I didn't know it could be this intense, this raw, this animalistic. I lower my face and press my cheek against the table. I squeeze my eyes shut. I let him fuck me. It's quiet. It's so quiet. And I don't know if it's because we were both so loud just a few seconds ago, or if he just needs a minute to recover. He's still inside me, but he's finished. He's just not moving. One of his hands is still covering my mouth, the other still squeezing my fingers. His face is still buried against my neck. But he's so incredibly still, I'm afraid to move. I don't even feel him breathing. The first thing to move is his hand, away from my mouth. He unlocks his fingers from mine and straightens them, pulling them slowly apart from mine. He presses both palms against the table and lifts his face away from my neck. He pulls out of me without a sound. It's still too quiet, so I don't move. I hear him as he pulls his pants back into position and zips them. I hear his footsteps as he walks away. He's walking away. His bedroom door slams shut, and I flinch. My cheek and palms and stomach are still flat against his table, but now so are my tears. They're falling. Falling, 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 and I can't stop them. I'm embarrassed. I'm ashamed. I don't have a clue what the hell is wrong with him, but I have too much pride and too little courage to find out. This felt like an end. I'm not sure I was ready for this to be the end. I'm not sure I was ready for there ever to be an end, and I hate myself for allowing my feelings to get to that point. I'm also angry, because here I am, standing in his apartment, looking for my pants, trying to stop my ridiculous tears, still feeling the remnants of him sliding down my leg. And I have no fucking clue why he had to ruin it. Ruin me. I finish getting dressed, and I leave.
Chapter 20. Miles. 6 years earlier. "You're getting an Audi," I tell her. I run my fingers over her bare stomach, and I kiss it. "It's cute." I press my ear to her skin and close my eyes. "I bet he's lonely in there," I say. "Are you lonely in there, buddy?" Rachel laughs. "You keep calling him a boy. What if he's a girl?" I tell Rachel whatever he is, I'll love him the same. I already love him. Or her. Our parents are out of town. We're playing house again, except this time we aren't really playing. It's kind of serious. "So what happens if he really does propose to her this time?" she asks. I tell her not to worry. I tell her he's not proposing. He would ask me first before he did it. I know that much about him. "We have to tell them," I say to her. She nods. She knows we have to tell them. "It's been 3 months. We graduate in 2. She's starting the show. She's getting an Audi. It's cute. We should tell them tomorrow, I say. She says, okay. I move away from her stomach and lie beside her. I pull her against me. I touch her face. I love you, Rachel, I tell her. She's not as scared now. She tells me she loves me too. You're doing a good job, I say. She doesn't know what I'm talking about, so I grin and touch her stomach. You're doing a good job growing him. I'm pretty sure you're going to grow the best baby any woman has ever grown. She laughs at my silliness. You love me so much, Rachel. I look at her, at the girl I gave my heart to, and I wonder how I got so lucky. I wonder why she loves me just as much as I love her. I wonder what my dad is going to say when he finds out about us. I wonder if Lisa will hate me. I wonder if she'll want to take Rachel back to Phoenix. I wonder how I can convince them that we've got this. What are we going to name him? I ask her. She's excited when I ask her this. She likes talking about names. She says if it's a girl, she wants to name her Claire, after her grandmother. I tell her I wish I knew her grandmother. I want to know the woman my daughter will be named after. She tells me her grandmother would have loved me. I tell her I love the name Claire. What if he's a boy? I ask. You can pick the boy name, she says. I tell her that's a lot of pressure. I tell her he'll have to live with his name the rest of his life. She says, then you better pick a good one. I'd better pick a good one. One that means something to you, she says. One that means something to me. I tell her I have the perfect name for him. She wants to know what it is. I tell her I'm not telling her. I'll tell her his name after it becomes his name, after he's born. She tells me I'm insane. She says she refuses to give birth to our baby until she knows his name. I laugh. I tell her she has no choice. She tells me I'm crazy. You love that about me, Rachel.
Chapter 21. Tate. I worked all weekend, so I haven't seen or spoken to Miles since Thursday night. I keep telling myself it's for the best, but sure as hell doesn't feel like it with the way I've been letting it eat at me. Tonight is Monday, and it's the first of 3 days when Corbin won't be home and Miles will be. I know he knows Corbin is gone, but based on the way he left things Thursday, I doubt he cares much. I half expected that he would eventually explain if I did something wrong, or at least tell me what upset him so much. But the last I got from him was the slam of his bedroom door after he walked away. I can see why he hasn't been in a relationship for 6 years. He's obviously clueless when it comes to how a guy should treat a girl. Which surprises me, because I get these vibes from him that he's really a decent guy. However, his actions during and after sex seem to contradict his character. It's as if pieces of the guy he used to be bleed over into the guy he's trying to be. If any other man ever treated me like he did, it would be the one and only time. I don't put up with the things I've seen a lot of my friends put up with. However, I find myself continuing to make excuses for him, like something could actually justify his actions last week. I'm beginning to fear that maybe I'm not so tough after all. That fear is immediately confirmed with the skip of my heart as soon as I step off the elevator. There's a note taped to my apartment door, so I rush to it and pull it down. It's just a folded piece of paper without anything written on the outside of it. I open it. I need to run an errand. I'll stop by at 7 if you want to come with me. I read the note several times. It's obviously from him and it's obviously for me, but the note reads so incredibly casual that for a second I begin to doubt that Thursday even happened. He was there, though. He knows how that night ended between us. He knows I must be upset or angry, but nothing in his note reveals that at all. I unlock my door and walk inside before I can work myself up to the point of beating on his door to scream at him. I drop my things once I'm inside my apartment and read the note one more time, dissecting everything from his handwriting down to his selection of words. I wad it up in my hands and throw it toward the kitchen, completely pissed off.
I'm pissed because I already know I'll be going with him. I don't know how not to. There's a soft knock on the door at exactly 7 o'clock. His punctuality pisses me off, and there's no reason for it. I have nothing against punctuality. I have a feeling every single thing Miles does tonight is going to piss me off. I walk to the front door and open it. He's standing in the hallway, several feet away. He's probably closer to his door than to mine, actually. He's looking down at his feet when I open the door, but he eventually lifts his eyes to meet mine. His hands are tucked away in his jacket pockets again, and he doesn't lift his head all the way up. I take this as a sign of submission from him, even though it's more than likely not.
Want to come?
His voice invades me, weakens me, turns me into liquid again. I nod as I step out into the hall and close the door behind me. I lock it and turn around to face him. He nods his head toward the elevators, silently telling me he'll follow behind me. I try to read the expression in his eyes, but I should know better. I walk toward the elevator and press the down button. He stands next to me, but neither of us speaks. It takes the elevator what seems like years to get to us. When it finally opens, we both breathe a quiet sigh of relief. But as soon as we're inside and the doors close, neither of us can breathe again. I can feel him watching me, but I don't look at him. I can't. I feel stupid. I feel like I want to cry again. Now that I'm here and I have no idea where we're going, I feel like a fool for allowing him to even get me this far.
I'm sorry.
His voice is weak, but it's also surprisingly sincere. I don't look at him. I don't even respond. He takes 3 steps across the elevator, and then he reaches down beside me and presses the emergency stop button. His finger lingers on the button as he watches me, but I keep my eyes down. My face is level with his chest, but my jaw is tense, and I won't look up at him. I won't.
Tate, I'm sorry, he repeats.
He's still not touching me, but he's invading again. He's standing so close to me I can feel his breath and him, and how much he really is sorry. But I don't even know what I'm supposed to be forgiving him for. He never promised anything other than sex, and that's exactly what he gave me. Sex. Nothing less and definitely nothing more.
I'm sorry, he says again. You didn't deserve that.
This time, he touches my chin, lifting my eyes to meet his. The feel of his fingers on my face causes my jaw to grow even more tense. I'm doing everything I can to keep up my armor, because I'm finding it hard to fight back my tears. The same thing I saw in his eyes when he kissed me at his door Thursday night is back. Something unspoken that he wishes he could say, but the only words that come out of his mouth are his apologies. He winces as though he's experiencing actual physical pain, and he presses his forehead to mine.
I'm sorry.
He presses his palms against the elevator wall and leans into me until our chests are touching. My arms are at my sides and my eyes are closed, and as much as I feel like crying right now, I refuse to do it in front of him. I'm still not sure what he's apologizing for specifically, but it doesn't matter, because it sounds like he's apologizing for everything. For starting something with me that we know wouldn't end well. For not being able to open up about his past. For not being able to open up about his future. For ruining me when he walked into his bedroom and slammed his door. One of his hands wraps around the side of my head, and he pulls me against him. His other hand drops to my back, and he squeezes me, pressing his cheek against the top of my head.
I don't know what this is, Tate, he confesses, but I swear, I didn't mean to hurt you. I just don't know what the hell I'm doing.
The apology in his voice is enough to make my arms want to hold him. I bring them up and grab the sleeves of his shirt, then press my face into his chest. We stand like this for several minutes, both of us completely lost. completely new to this, completely confused. He eventually releases me and hits the button to take us to the ground floor. I still haven't spoken, because I'm not even sure what words to use in this situation. When the elevator doors open, he takes my hand in his and holds it all the way to his car. He opens my door and waits for me to climb inside, then he closes it and walks around to his side. I've never been inside his car before. I'm surprised by the simplicity of it. I know Corbin makes a decent amount of money and usually likes to spend it on nice things. This car is understated, just like Miles. He exits the parking garage, and we drive in silence for several miles. I'm tired of the quiet and tired of the curiosity, so the first thing I say to him since he ruined me is, "Where are we going?" It's as if my voice makes the awkwardness completely disintegrate, because he exhales like he's relieved to hear it. "To the airport," he says. "Not for work, though. I go there sometimes to watch the planes take off." He reaches across the console and takes my hand in his. It's comforting and scary all at once. His hands are warm, and it makes me want him to hold my entire body in them, but it scares me how much I want that. It's completely quiet again until we reach the airport. There are restricted access signs, but he passes them like he knows exactly where he's going. We finally pull into a parking lot overlooking the runway. Several jets are lined up, waiting to take off. He points to the left, and I look, just as one of the planes begins to accelerate. His car fills with the sound of the engines as it zooms past us. We both watch it make its ascent until the landing gear disappears and the plane is swallowed up by the night. "You come here a lot?" I ask him while I continue to stare out my window. He laughs, so naturally I turn to face him. "That sounded like a pickup line," he says, smiling. His smile makes me smile. His eyes drop to my mouth, and my smile makes his smile disappear. "Yeah, I do," he says as he looks out his window again to watch the next jet prepare for takeoff. I realize in this moment that things aren't the same between us. Something huge changed, and I can't tell if it's good or bad. He brought me here because he wants to talk. I just don't know what he wants to talk about. "Miles," I say, wanting him to look at me again. He doesn't. "It's not fun," he says quietly. "This thing we're doing." I don't like that sentence. I want him to take it back, because it feels like it's cutting me. But he's right. "I know," I say. "If we don't stop now, it'll just get worse." I don't verbally agree with him this time. I know he's right, but I don't want to stop. The thought of not being with him again makes my stomach feel hollow. "What did I do to upset you so much?" He cuts his eyes to mine, and I hardly recognize them from the ice built up behind them.
"That was all me, Tate," he says firmly. "Don't think for a second that my issues are because of anything you do or don't do."
I find a slight amount of relief from his answer, but still have no idea what went wrong with him. We keep our eyes locked, waiting for the other to fill the silence again. I have no idea what he's suffered through in the past, but it must have been pretty damn difficult if he can't move on after 6 years. "You act like it's such a bad thing for us to like each other."
"Maybe it is," he says.
I kind of want him to stop talking now, because everything he says is just causing me more pain and making me even more confused. "So you brought me here to call it off?" He sighs heavily.
"I just wanted it to be fun. But I think you might have different expectations from mine. I don't want to hurt you, and if we keep doing this, I will."
He looks out his window again. I want to hit something, but instead I run two frustrated hands down my face and fall back heavily against my seat. I've never met anyone who can say so little when they speak. He's definitely perfected the art of evasiveness. You have to give me more than that, Miles. A simple explanation, maybe? What the hell happened to you? His jaw tightens as firmly as the grip he still has on his steering wheel.
I asked you to do two things for me. Don't ask about my past, and never expect a future. You're doing both.
I nod. Yes, Miles, you're right, I am. Because I like you, and I know you like me, and when we're together, it's phenomenal. So that's what normal people do. When they find someone they're compatible with, they open up to them. They let them in. They want to be with them. They don't fuck them against their kitchen table and then walk away and make them feel like complete shit. Nothing. He gives me nothing. No reaction whatsoever. He faces forward and starts his car.
You were right,
he says. He puts the car in reverse and prepares to pull out of the parking lot.
It's a good thing we weren't friends first. Would have made this a lot harder.
I turn away from him because I'm embarrassed at how angry his words are making me. I'm embarrassed it's hurting me like it is, but everything with Miles hurts. It hurts because I know how good our good moments are, and I know how easily the bad moments would go away if he would just stop trying to fight this.
Tate,
he says with remorse. I want to rip his voice from his throat. His hand meets my shoulder and the car isn't moving anymore.
Tate, I didn't mean that.
I push his hand away.
Don't,
I say. Either admit you want me for more than just sex, or take me home. He's quiet. Maybe he's contemplating my ultimatum. Admit it, Miles. Admit it. Please. The car begins moving again.
What did you expect would happen?
Cap asks, handing me another tissue. When Miles and I arrived back at the apartment complex, I couldn't bear riding up that elevator with him, so I took a seat next to Cap and let him go up alone. Unlike the hard exterior I tried to show Miles, I completely break down while spilling all the details to Cap, whether he cares to hear them or not. I wipe my nose again and drop the tissue, adding it to the pile next to me on the floor. I was being delusional, I say. I told myself I could handle it if he never wanted more. I guess I thought if I let him take his time, he'd eventually come around. Cap reaches around to a trash can at his side and places it between us so I have somewhere to toss my tissues.
If that boy can't see what a good thing he could have with you, then he ain't worth your time.
I nod, agreeing with him. I do have a lot more important things to do with my time, but for some reason, I feel as if Miles can see what a good thing he has with me. I feel like he wishes he could make this work between us, but something bigger than him or me or us is holding him back. I just wish I knew what it was.
Have I told you my favorite joke yet?
Cap asks. I shake my head and grab another tissue from the box in his hands, relieved at the change in subject.
Knock, knock,
he says. I don't expect his favorite joke to be a knock-knock joke, but I play along. Who's there? Interrupting cow, he says.
Interrupting moo,
he yells loudly, cutting me off. I stare at him. Then I laugh. I laugh harder than I've laughed in a long damn time.
Chapter 22. Miles. 6 years earlier. My dad says he needs to speak to us. He asks me to get Rachel and meet him and Lisa at the dining room table. I tell him okay, that there's something we need to speak to them about, too. Curiosity flashes in his eyes, but only for a brief second. He thinks about Lisa again, and he's not curious anymore. His everything is Lisa. I go to Rachel's room and tell my everything that they want to speak to us. We all sit down at the dining room table. I know what he's going to say. He's going to tell us he proposed. I don't want to care, but I do. I wonder why he didn't tell me first. This makes me sad, but only a little bit. It's not going to matter after we tell them what we have to tell them. I ask Lisa to marry me, he says. Lisa smiles at him. He smiles at her. Rachel and I aren't smiling. So we did, Lisa says, flashing her ring. So we did, Rachel gasps quietly. They're already married. They look happy. They're looking at us, waiting for a reaction. Lisa is concerned. She doesn't like that Rachel looks so upset. Honey, it was spur of the moment. We were in Vegas. Neither of us wanted a big wedding. Please don't be mad. Rachel begins crying into her hands. I wrap my arm around her and want to console her. I want to kiss her reassuringly, but my father and Lisa wouldn't understand it. I need to tell them. My dad looks confused that Rachel is so upset. I didn't think either of you would mind, he says. You're both leaving for college in a couple of months. He thinks we're mad at them. Dad, I say, keeping my arm around Rachel. Lisa? I look at both of them. I ruin their day. Ruin. Rachel is pregnant. Silence. 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 Deafening silence. Lisa is in shock. My father is comforting Lisa. His arm is around her and he's rubbing her back. You don't even have a boyfriend, Lisa says to Rachel. Rachel looks at me. My father stands. He's angry now. Who's responsible? He yells. He looks at me. Tell me who he is, Miles. What kind of guy knocks a girl up and doesn't have the balls to be with her when she tells her own mother? What kind of guy would let a girl's brother be the one to break the news? I'm not her brother, I say to my father. I'm not. He ignores my comment. He's pacing the kitchen now. He hates the person who did this to Rachel. Dad, I say. I stand up. He stops pacing. He turns and looks at me. Dad? I'm suddenly not as confident as I was when I sat down to do this. I've got this. Dad, it was me. I'm the one who got her pregnant. My words are hard for him to swallow. Lisa is looking back and forth between Rachel and me. She can't swallow what I'm saying either. That's not possible, my father says, trying to push away all the thoughts that are telling him it is possible. I wait for it to process. His expression changes from confusion to anger. He looks at me like I'm not even his son. He's looking at me like I'm the guy who knocked up his new stepdaughter. He hates me. He hates me. He really hates me. Get out of this house. I look at Rachel. She grabs my hand and shakes her head, silently pleading for me not to leave. Get out. He says again. He hates me. I tell Rachel I should go, just for a little while. She begs me not to go. My father walks around the table and shoves me. He pushes me toward the door. I release Rachel's hand. I'll be at Ian's, I tell her. I love you. Those words are obviously too much for my father because his fist immediately comes at me. He pulls his hand back and looks almost as shocked as I do that he just punched me. I step outside and my father slams the door. My father hates me. I walk to my car and open the door. I sit in the driver's seat, but I don't crank the engine. I look in the mirror. My lip is bleeding. I hate my father. I get out of my car and slam the door. I walk back into the house. My father rushes to the door. I hold my palms up. I don't want to hit him, but I will. If he touches me again, I'll hit him. Rachel isn't at the table anymore. Rachel is in her room. I'm sorry, I say to both of them. We didn't mean for it to happen, but it happened, and now we have to deal with it. Lisa is crying. My father hugs her. I look at Lisa. I love her, I say. I'm in love with your daughter. I'll take care of them. We've got this. Lisa can't even look at me. They both hate me. This started before I even met you, Lisa. I met her before I knew you were with my father, and we tried to stop it. That's kind of a lie. My father steps forward. The entire time, this has been going on the entire time she's lived here. I shake my head. It's been going on since before she lived here. He hates me even more now. He wants to hit me again, but Lisa is pulling him back. She tells him they'll figure it out. She tells him she can get it taken care of. She tells him it'll be okay. It's too late for that, I tell Lisa. She's too far along. I don't wait for my father to hit me again. I rush down the hallway and go to Rachel. I lock the door behind me. She meets me halfway. She throws her arms around my neck and cries into my shirt. Well, I say, the hard part is over with. She laughs with her cry. She tells me the hard part isn't over yet. She tells me the hard part is getting him out. I laugh. I love you so much, Rachel. I love you so much, Miles, she whispers.
Chapter 23, Tate.
I miss you so much, Miles.
Thoughts like that are why I'm drowning my sorrows in chocolate. It's been 3 weeks since he brought me home. It's been 3 weeks since I've laid eyes on him. Christmas came and went, but I barely noticed because I worked through it. 2 Thursday game nights that Miles didn't show up to. New Year's came and went. Another semester of school began. And Tate still misses Miles. I take my chocolate chips and my chocolate milk and walk to the kitchen to hide them from the person knocking at the apartment door. I already know it's not Miles because the knock at my door belongs to Chad and Taryn. They're the only friends I've made here, as busy as I am. And they're only my friends because we're in study group together. Which is why they're knocking on my door right now. I open it, and Chad is standing in the doorway, sans Taryn. Where's Taryn?
She got called in to cover a shift, he says. She can't make it tonight.
I hold the door open further to let him in. As soon as he steps over the threshold, Miles opens his apartment door across the hall. He freezes when our eyes meet. He holds me captive with his stare for several seconds until his gaze slides over my shoulder and lands on Chad. I glance at Chad, who looks at me and arches an eyebrow. He can apparently tell something's up, so he respectfully retreats into my apartment.
I'll be in your room, Tate, he says.
That's nice of Chad, offering to give me privacy with the guy across the hall. However, announcing that he'll be waiting in my bedroom probably wasn't the respect Miles wanted to be shown, because now he's stepping back inside his apartment.
His eyes drop to the floor right before he closes his door. The look on his face sends pangs of guilt straight to my stomach. I have to remind myself that this was his choice. I have nothing to feel guilty about, even if he is misjudging the situation he just opened his door to. I close the front door and join Chad in my room. The silent pep talk I tried to give myself did nothing to ease the guilt. I sit on the bed and he sits at the desk.
That was weird, he says, eyeing me. I'm a little scared to leave your apartment now.
I shake my head. Don't worry about Miles. He has issues, but they aren't my issues anymore. Chad nods and doesn't question me any further. He opens the study guide and lays it across his lap as he props his feet up on the bed.
Taryn already made notes for chapter 2, so if you get 3, I'll cover 4.
Deal, I say. I scoot back against my pillow and spend the next hour preparing notes for chapter 3. But I have no idea how I managed to concentrate because the only thing I can think about is the look that crossed Miles' face
right before he closed the door. I could tell I hurt him. That makes us even now, I guess.